Emre Can auf rechts. Gegen Insumio. Und noch Emre Can, Steckpass auf vorne, aber Stiller stand parat. Chris Führig auf Girassi, da haben wir ein bisschen Platz. Chris Führig teilt sich durch die Mitte durch. Chris Führig, in der Mitte ist Girassi und rechts läuft Leveling. Der bekommt den Ball jetzt, da hat ein bisschen Platz. Leveling, er ist jetzt im Strafraum. Leveling, Spiel, Ball zurück und das ist Tor! Girassi schießt den VfB hier 1:0 in Führung. Ein super Tor von unserem VfB Stuttgart. Toll gesehen von Seo Girassi, wie er den Ball rausspielt auf Jamie Leveling, der tankt sich in den Strafraum rein, legt quer auf Seo Girassi, der knallt das Leder um rechts in den Winkel und schraubt das Tacho auf 1:0.
Dortmund, the counter-attack team par excellence in the Bundesliga, just about to get a taste of their own medicine here. Girassi for Jamie Leveling. Leveling cuts it back, Girassi, that's glorious stuff! Stuttgart's top scorer. 24 goals this season. That is an incredible amount.
Welcome to episode 117 of VfB Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English-language VfB Stuttgart fan podcast where reviews are unofficial, uninformed, usually unprepared. Like I said, this is episode 117. My name is Travis. You can reach me at Hazelfish. You can reach us on Twitter at Valpy Americana. Our website is valpyamericana.weebly.com. Matt is on assignment right now. So the other man of the hour, should I say multiple hours, Ted, is you. This is episode 11. You are going to premiere on the Dortmund Dispatch podcast tomorrow as we record this. So that'll be Wednesday. This is your 11th episode. There's a lot to throw at you, man. First off, your podcast famous. These are the famous 11s of the last 15 years. You got Juan Perea, Eric Tommy, Anastasis Donis, who I personally loved, Takuma Asano, Carlos Grezo, who I have no idea who that was, and a couple other guys. I'm leaving out all the big names. So Klinsmann, Hitzlsperger, Elber, Freddie Bobic. Of those 11s, which one just kind of makes your brewstring beat a little bit? Or do you even have time for your brewstring to beat since you're so famous now?
I am with you. I don't even know who Carlos Grezo is. I was following the team during those years, but I could not pick that guy out of the lineup. I'm going with Juan José Perea. I absolutely love his connection to Stuttgart and VfB, like through his uncle, this random Colombian kid who like somehow grew up supporting this club and went to the stadium like decades ago. That's just so awesome. So I'm going him.
Yeah, there was a beautiful picture of him as a kid there in his scarf and all that stuff doing it. Ted, exactly what you and I try to do. Stuff all of our children into as much Stuttgart stuff as possible and just hope, beyond hope, that someday they're Juan Perea. So that's a great choice there. Let's go to some shout-outs here. Phil Bonney stayed away from the cliche, so he did not get Valpe Bingo, but that's okay. He did a great job like usual. Pod predictions, I finally won a week, but that's mostly because Matt and Austin forgot to put their picks in, but I'll still take it. Jeff still has a commanding 9-game lead over Matt. The Valpe Frauen, Ted, they won again over Gottenheim, but SC Sand won as well. So it's coming down the wire there. And then the U21 team for the men won. So they're currently in third place in the regional league with 6 matches left to play. They got a 1-goal win over Hessen Kassel. And Dennis Simon, who could be the goalie of the future, saved a penalty kick. I mean, the kickers won and Hoffenheim's second team won. So they're still in the lead. We're 5 points behind the lead, 3 points behind second place. Any thoughts on the Frauen or the second team?
The Frauen stuff is exciting because, like, I just love how that season is lining up with them playing Sandhausen at the in week 24 and us being 2 points ahead. It just has last day drama written all over it, which is so exciting. So I go that one, but kudos to Stuttgart 2. Awesome stuff that they're doing so well. And you've got to think great for future squad development of the first team, hopefully.
Yeah, it's. I really hope we've been talking about it for a while that the Valve service team can figure out a way to stream that final game if it does come down to them and SC San to get promoted out of the regional league. So hopefully they can figure out a way to do that. Speaking of hope, here's some former Valve beers that are out on loan. Gildy Oz played 1 minute in a loss. They're just outside the Europa Conference qualities in his Polish league. Juan Pereira, who we just spoke about, played 9 minutes and had an assist and a big win over Wiesbaden, one of my favorite teams. Hansa is 1 point above the relegation from the second league. Omar Baez played 70 minutes in a loss in Turkey. Who knows what's going on with that? Poor Luca Pfeiffer wasn't even on the bench for Darmstadt. That guy, yikes. Mo Sanko, though, had 2 goals in 2 minutes last week and then played 3 minutes in a win for his Dutch club. Castanares had a goal in 19 minutes against Au, and Ulm is currently in second in the third division, looking to get promoted. Wahid Fahir can't play. He's, man, that guy's never healthy. And Jovan Milosevic, finally back from a foot injury, he played and scored right away for St. Gallen and scored a late goal in the win. There's a lot of guys on loan. A lot of them are offensive players. We all know Gil and Luca are not part of the future. Omar Baez is going to stay somewhere else. That poor kid just can't figure it out. But all the rest of those guys, especially probably Jovan and Mo, maybe some other ones. I mean, any of those guys that you think might have a chance to be on the roster next season?
I think realistically, probably only those two in my mind. They both still have a lot of development potential. I've got to think they're low wage guys. So I don't think that there's necessarily harm to keeping them around since we're not paying a transfer fee. And I got to think we're going to need more squad depth next year, given all the matches we're going to play with, hopefully Champions League or worst case scenario, Europa League at this point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if any of those guys, I got a soft spot for Mo Sanko just because the way his injury happened against Fert that 1 year. But hopefully one of him or Jovan can kind of take that backup striker role next year. But if they can't, that's actually a good thing, like you said, because that means a couple of our top guys have stayed. Speaking of top performances, Peter won week of OFC Fantasy. He's got a 2-point lead over Village Footy, but Village Footy has a 10-point lead in the overall standings over Lukasstadt. OFC Tippspiel, I won the week, but I'm in sixth place. I'm just struggling. But I did crush Dave, friend of the show, so suck it, Dave. I've got that going for me. Stefan, I am Rob, and Kai Guy are still in the top three. And Ted, the OFC man of the match was Alex Neubel with almost 60% of the vote. He had an outstanding game. It was really cool. At the end of the match, the guys shoved him out in front of their celebrating crew, so he gets some individual love from the traveling support. Do you agree with Alex being man of the match? And if so, who would have been your vice man of the match in this one?
Yeah, so personally, I actually picked Angelo Stiller. But I think it was a 1A and 1B sort of thing in my head with these two. No, that, like, I take no credit away from Alex Neubel. He was awesome in this match. Just like, it was one of those where part of it seemed like he made it seem like Dortmund was just putting shots right at him. But I think some of that for him, he was just in the right position every single time and saw every shot coming, which was amazing. But for me, Stiller playing out of position, having to make up for the loss of Anton, picking up a yellow card inside the first 10 minutes, like that dude, kudos to him.
That's probably why I don't coach anymore, because that's such a great point that you brought up. Alex Neubel made everything look like the shots were coming right at him, so he made it look somewhat easy. So I was like, that guy doesn't deserve man of the match because he played too well. The heck with him. I, like everybody else, was just awestruck with how Angelo Stiller continued to play amazing and continued to play amazing in a position that he hasn't played since the third division, from what I've read before. So Angelo Stiller looked good to me, but you can't argue with Alex Neubel there. So speaking of arguing, man, let's get into the match itself. Let's see how we did against. All right, so Ted, heading into this one, the last five matches were pretty even. I mean, we won twice this season. We had a famous 3-3 draw at the end of last season. So things were trending pretty well for Vapi going into this one. We needed this win, which is so bizarre to say, because usually we go into a Dortmund match and we're like, we'll see what happens. But things have changed so much that this was a six-pointer, but it wasn't the six-pointer that you and I are used to. Because usually when we say six-pointer, we're like, oh, here we go, a relegation six-pointer. No, it was a Champions League six-pointer. So I just want that to sink in for a little bit about how crazy the difference is and how the stress level was completely different. There was no Wally, like you mentioned, because of the yellow card accumulation. But Dortmund had just beaten Bayern. But Dortmund is famous for being just completely all over the place. And Matt said it last week. He fully expected Dortmund to kind of be deflated going into this one. I was still worried. What were you thinking going into this match?
I felt this one was just like balanced on a knife's edge and totally could have gone either way coming into it. Like on the one hand, I thought, yeah, maybe they come in with that post Bayern hangover, you know, absolutely huge win for them. They get a, you know, like a win against an Angstgegner, call it Der Klassiker, don't call it Der Klassiker. Like I think Schalke's their big rival and they could, I wouldn't say they could care less about Bayern, but like it's still a meaningful match, but that's not their true rival. But pretty in good. Any event, to beat them after so much bad luck against them in the last decade was huge. So I did think maybe they would come in and did come in with a bit of a hangover. But then like the 50th birthday celebrations for the Westfalenstadion, like you figured that had to pump them up too. So a lot of pressure on them. And a lot of pressure on us, I guess, as well to rebound after the Heidenheim match.
Right, because there was that letdown at really against Heidenheim, which apparently after Bayern played and lost to them isn't a letdown. That is just the fact we got a point against those guys, I guess, is pretty good. Strange to say. But I was a little worried, yeah, because you didn't know how the guys were going to rebound after the Heidenheim match. We're also playing on the road, which is also tough. You had the emotion of the 50-year celebration of the Dortmund stadium, but you also didn't know how the Stuttgart players were going to respond to the fact that everything is gravy at this point, right? Everything is safe. We don't have to worry about relegation. We don't have to worry about Europe. We're in Europe. It's just which brand we're in. And so I really didn't know what we would see coming out of this. And then going back to what we talked about before, the lineup was going to be really kind of in flux with Waldy not being there because of that silly yellow card you got at the end of the Heidenheim game. So let's talk about that really quick. It looked like it was some version of a 4-2-2-2. And it looked initially like Ada and Ito were playing in the back, bookended by Maxi and Joshua. But it turns out it was more of almost a 3 at the back. And with Angelo Stiller back there, I didn't notice that right away because Angelo was so flexible. Did you catch that right away?
So I noticed very quickly that he was playing all the way back. Initially, I was like, man, Ada is so much shorter than I remembered. And then I'm like, wait a minute. No, that is Angelo Stiller. So yeah, that caught me by surprise too. And I realized throughout the match, I kept expecting, you know, maybe that was just, I was catching glimpses of Stiller playing out of position, but then I realized, no, this is all game plan by Hoeneß. This is where this guy's going to play all match.
It's funny because Phil Bonney messed up Ada and Angelo a couple times. So it wasn't just you and me that were like, wait a minute, Ada's got background playing center back. So that makes the most sense. But they shifted up and he looked seamless back there. It was almost like his flexibility is almost like a Wataru Endo. Wataru can play box to box. He's much better as a classic center mid, but he can also play center back because he's got amazing physical skills and he's got crazy hops. And we kind of saw that out of Angelo there. So he played great in that somewhat new position. But that first half was interesting because I sent you some notes. The word I used was cagey. It was almost a boring first half. It was almost kind of like Phil Bonney could tell was kind of like, let's get something to happen because these are two top clubs and they're both kind of feeling each other out here a little bit. So Ito and Stiller were kind of at the back and they just looked like butter. Like they've been playing together for a long time, but you had Hummels and Schlotterbeck who were playing really well together as well. And they were kind of neutralizing everything that was happening. It seemed like both sides in that first half were missing that final pass. Like they're just, I don't know if it was really good defense or it was just kind of a little bit of rough play there a little bit, but I loved how aggressive Stuttgart was playing out of the back, how they were willing to take chances. And we've seen it all year long, but it's one thing to see it against a Heidenheim, I guess, or a Bochum, but to see it against a Dortmund who's going to press you, watching Alex Neubel draw them in, watching them do one-touch passes with Angelo and Ito, I just loved how brave this team played in the first half, even though you could probably argue Dortmund was the better team in that first half.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there had to have been a couple of times where Alex Neubel had it at his feet for like 5 seconds, just sitting there waiting. And like, there, I think Phil Bonney made a comment on it at some point, or maybe Owo Moyela, like, it was like, wow, that was a really, really long time that he just held onto that ball. It almost like became comical that he was waiting for that outlet pass to draw the defense in. But yeah, I thought it was a cool strategy, definitely bold to play that against a team like this. But the defense, I would agree, KG in the first half. I feel like the only, like with Dortmund, it was all speculative distance shots. You know, you had one, I think, that Marcel Sabitzer took. I think Füllkrug took another, but they were like from 30 yards out. Best chance probably was the Seyru header from a really nice Fury cross that normally you think like that's Seyru's bread and butter. You're like, this dude puts that on frame 9 out of 10
on it too. That's what was so wild. He just didn't even get it on goal. Just whipped. Well, let's talk about the defense for a second. You mentioned Alex. He did have some saves from distance there. It was kind of interesting because I almost thought Dortmund was like, listen, we're going to test this guy because he had a rough week last week and we'll see what happens. And there was a nervous moment there where he sort of bobbled one, but he played great in that first half. It was a combination. The play of the first half is probably where Joshua was able to slow down Adeyemi a little bit. And then Alex was able to hold his spot and then get a leg on the shot because he had a one-on-one, basically. It probably cost Joshua a couple games as he hurt his foot, I think, on that play. And we'll talk about that later. But let's talk about the defense. Let's talk about Alex. He did. The shots were right at him, but he kept us in the game, at least in the first half, I thought.
Yeah, that one, that was his toughest save of the match, I feel like, far and away. Just going one-on-one with a dude who was running our players ragged. And, you know, he did a great job, I think, of cutting down the angle. But I still think it was advantage Adeyemi in that instance.
Yeah, let's get into the second half now. So the second half, it's much more back and forth. There's a lot we could talk about here. You've got the Seyru goal. I loved his ode to Mario Gomez when he tied the club record for goals scored in a season. There was a great individual play. I think it was Stiller who got the ball up. And then there was a great pass to Chris. And Chris had a great individual play to get it back to Seyru. Seyru had a great pass over to Jamie. Jamie had that great weighted pass into Seyru. Dennis cleared space. I don't think a lot of people saw that. I didn't see it on first glance. But Dennis kind of cleared space with kind of a messy jog. He didn't really do his full-out sprint. But then I think it was Hummels had to account for that, leaving Seyru open a little bit. Then Seyru just put that thing away. We've given Seyru a ton of credit all year long. We've given Dennis a ton of credit all year long. The guy who seemed to be getting a lot of love was Jamie Leveling after this match. I mean, he looked fantastic. And he's had a little bit of an up and down year, but it certainly looked up in this game.
Yeah. Yeah, so many good points in that piece that you just mentioned. I didn't notice the Dennis run or jog until watching it on replay, but he peels so far left on that to force a Dortmund defender to go with him. Mm-hmm. And at the point that Leveling puts that ball into the box, like, it's crazy how much space Seyru has to put a foot on that ball. And I think that a lot of that is down to Dennis. Chris's jukes in the center circle, putting those guys on their backsides, was incredible. Like, we see him do that at outside the box all the time, but watching him do it at midfield is pretty hilarious. And then Leveling, super impressive. And I think it was actually pretty close. It was like right before that he had a really nice ball that got to his feet And he had an opportunity. I think you could make an argument he could have settled the ball, taken an extra touch, and probably gotten it on frame. But he tried to one-time it. And, you know, you wonder, like, with him being up and down, what does that do to his confidence? So for him to have recovered from that and, you know, made that great run. But I feel like that goal was very similar to the two that we scored in the first half against Heidenheim, like just a pure team goal. Like, you can't chalk it up to anybody. So many guys involved, everybody integral.
I think that's such a great point, because if Angelo doesn't get that quick pass out, the Dortmund defense has a chance to reset. If Chris doesn't make that great individual play, Jamie doesn't make that way to pass, Dennis doesn't go off into space a little bit, you're 100% right. It was just a beautiful goal to watch. It was awesome to see Sabre do the Mario Gomez thing, but it was probably more cool to see him go over and hug Jamie, because he knew Jamie was the one that delivered, you know, that pass to him. There's three other guys that I want to talk about, though, in this match. So Joshua comes out at halftime. We didn't know why then, but we do know why now. The poor guy's had feet problems in the past, metatarsal injuries. He had a metatarsal reaction again. So he's going to be out for a number of weeks. It's not season ending, but it was just so fun to watch him and Jamie on the right side. There's a lot of physical presence when those two guys are playing on that side. The guy who came in was Sergu, who has been talked about as not getting re-signed after this season. He made a pretty good reason for him to be, for that purchase option on his loan to be purchased, because he came in 45 minutes and he put himself in spaces to make Füllkrug uncomfortable. He wasn't able to stop the shots, but he was able to prevent him from getting clear shots there. So I thought Leo played really well. And then I do want to give some love for Silas. He came in last week against Heidenheim and made a definite difference. Had a couple misses, but definitely made a difference. He came in this match and did the exact same thing. And if not for Seyru blowing what he has made all season long in the 93rd minute or so, Silas comes in and immediately has an assist, right? He didn't look too happy after the match. His playing time isn't what it once was. But I want to give some love to those three guys. You've got Silas, you got Stereo. And that's actually only two guys, but they played like three. So I'll say there are three there. So any thoughts on either of those two?
I got thoughts on both. Yeah, I was super impressed by Leonidas Stereou. And I think it was super telling on the broadcast when he got subbed in. Neither Phil Bonney nor Patrick Obamoyela knew who he was. they mixed up his name when he came in. And I was like, no, that's Stereou. And I can't remember who they thought he was.
That's right. There was a number thing and they kept mixing up the number with somebody else and they had to apologize.
Yeah. So they could not get it. Like, it was almost as if nobody even knew who this guy was. And like, that's kind of who he's been this season. They've tossed him into a couple of matches, but nothing like this stage, like a 3-4 in the table matchup in front of 80,000 fans, you know, blowing out 50 candles on a birthday cake, you know, for a team that just beat Bayern. Like, talk about stakes. And he came in and, like, almost immediately, I think, served one up to Dennis for his headed chance. Mm-hmm. And he put that thing on a plate from all the way across the field. Like, incredible touch on that, and then had, you know, great defense, really slowed down the Dortmund wingers. So much love to him. Silas too, you're right. I feel like this season has lacked he's had everything but his finishing touch or finishing pass. And it was frustrating that he had the pass in this one. That was so well weighted.
Yep.
Seyru normally puts that away. Would have been great to see him get that assist. But he made a difference in the game. Total change of pace guy.
Yeah, it was funny because Leo said after the match exactly what you said about how amazing it was to come in that moment, to play in front of that crowd and that type of game of import. And he's what? Our third backup? Second backup? I mean, Alex Rowe, who is hopefully coming back. Dan Axo, who is not coming back this season. I mean, and Leo was probably number two, three in the pecking order on the bench there. So it was awesome to see him come in. Silas, like you said, it would be awesome to see him get some results there. It was funny because Phil Bonney actually said, is like, yeah, this guy's not in for his defense. And you would watch him play defense and he got burned every single time on that side. But when he's on offense, it's hard to contain the guy. He had one play where he was just playing youth soccer against all these other guys, finally turned the ball over, but it was a lot of fun to watch. The thing I want to talk about, and I'm really interested because you just got done talking to the Dortmund supporters, Dortmund Dispatch. One of the big things I noticed, and it was on Twitter, was the cynical play. So there's about 9 minutes of added time. And even before that, Stuttgart started to do the classic guys are getting hurt, guys are cramping, kicking the ball out of bounds, Alex Neubel getting a yellow card because he's taking too long to do it. These are usually time-wasting tactics used against us because we're usually the ones that are chasing the game. There was a moment during the game where Jamie was cramping up a little bit and Dennis went over to him and was like, dude, lay down. You could see him verbally saying it upset a lot of Dortmund fans. And a couple of them said, listen, we're upset because we just don't like time wasting. We know that we do it too. I'm kind of interested. Flabby Viking brought it up. He's like, what did you think of it? I thought it was brilliant. This is the way the game is played. There was 9 minutes of added time. It wasn't like we got away with anything. This is standard practice. On the flip side, it's been used against us all the time. I'm curious as to what the Dortmund guys thought if it came up in there or what your thoughts were on us turning the tables, being the guys are like, oh, I'm cramped. And then 5 minutes later, you're amazingly healthy.
I was surprised. So I was on with Brian and Eli from the Dortmund Dispatch podcast, and they didn't bring it up as being something that bugged them. If anything, they were more upset at their players for loafing around and even for some of them not having a sense of urgency in extra time. So if anything, I was more proactively apologetic for it because I was definitely cringing a little bit with Jamie going down and yet staying on the field and, you know, trying to figure out, am I actually injured? No, I'm not injured. but I will say 9 minutes of extra time seemed a bit excessive for me. That was like Qatar World Cup all over again. Like, I don't know where the referee got that figure.
That was a big, big number. Yeah, it was interesting because, like I said, we're usually on the other side of that. So I could get, if you're a Dortmund fan, you're like, come on. Especially because Dennis acted like he had pulled his hamstring. And then at the end of the match, he's jumping up and down, holding his hand to his ear, egging the Dortmund fans on. You're like, oh boy, I'm glad you're wearing the Bruce string because I wouldn't like that too much if I was on the other side of that. I want to get your thoughts. So the game ends. It's a 1-0 victory. The Dortmund players were obviously disappointed. The Stuttgart players were just exhausted. Patrick said during the broadcast about how you were going to see exactly what this match meant to these players once the match was over. And the way they celebrated, the way they were just exhausted, you saw what it means to them. They know what they're chasing now. They've admitted it. It's the Champions League. And this was a 6-point game to put them in the driver's seat, you know, going forward there, especially considering things are kind of weird with the support right now. And it's not that people aren't supporting the club at all or the guys on the pitch, but the opening 10 minutes of this game was quiet, right? There was another fan protest because they're not happy with what's going on with the upper management here. I don't know. Did you notice that? You probably noticed the black smoke that was out again. Sebastian looked pretty pissed again, because it's wrecking the momentum a little bit. So once the 10 minutes were up, the crowd was loud. The traveling support was loud like they always are. But it is kind of weird that, I don't know, the quiet black smoke aspect of it.
Yeah, it is interesting. And at the beginning of the match, I was under the impression maybe it was just because of how loud the Dortmund fans were, how excited they were. So I didn't put together actually that our fans were kind of doing a little bit of a silent protest until the black smoke came out. it was also cool to see some pictures after the match of the Dortmund ultras having a banner in their section that basically said like, no, like the club management needs to be true to its word. Mm-hmm. So cool. And something that I don't think we would see in American sports, A, because NFL owners wouldn't let banners into the stadium in the first place. But even if they did make it in, you know, there's too much animosity between fan bases.
Yeah, I don't think Browns fans are going to care if Bengals are moving to, you know, Minnesota or wherever they might be going there. Yeah, so that was cool to see there. So let's go to the final thoughts and reality here, Matt. So, Ted, we got 17 out of 21 points against teams that we were hoping to get points against in January, February, March. Now we're starting this April and May swing to where we're playing some eye-level teams now. And we start off with the first one against Dortmund. We got three big points and a huge six-pointer, like you mentioned, especially since Leipzig beat everything up out of Freiburg. So here's the table. In third place, tied with Bayern, but in third because of goal difference, is Stuttgart with 60. In fifth place, I believe, is it – oh, I didn't update this. Is it – Leipzig and Dortmund, are they both with 53 points? And that's it.
Leipzig and Dortmund are tied on points, and Leipzig, I think, has now pipped them on goal differential.
So it's a three-team race at this point. And I asked Matt this last time, you know, with six matches left, we've got a seven-point lead. We do have a couple tough ones coming up. We're playing Leverkusen. We're playing a tough Bayern Munich. You don't know what's going to happen there. What do you think? Top four?
I think top four. Yeah. If you had asked me this earlier in the season, I don't know that I would have had the confidence. But I'm riding with Dennis Undav on this. Us and Leverkusen are the two best teams in the league. And I think we're just now that we're getting to the, you know, the end game, we're starting to see that become a reality reflected in the table.
Yeah, I think what helps us too is that Leipzig and Dortmund have a head-to-head match. So that helps us. And then I believe Dortmund has another tough match on their schedule. We've got Frankfurt coming up. We've got Bremen coming up. So if we can take care of that business before we play before we play Leverkusen, boy, things could be looking pretty good for us. So we got Leverkusen and Bayern at the same time. So listen, Ted, it was another dramatic win, another great win. I mean, the season's going better than any of us could have ever anticipated. We're now going to be disappointed if we finish in fifth place, which is crazy to say. We've got a whole nother half segment to do with news and questions and stuff like that. But final thoughts on the match and final thoughts on the season, you know, with six games left.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say it's very interesting coming from our world and then doing a podcast with Borussia Dortmund fans and the difference between the expectations of the two clubs and just how everything is gravy, like you said towards the beginning right now. Like, we're happy with whatever we get at this point. We would have been happy to finish in 11th place at the beginning of the season. And, you know, here we are, knowing that we're guaranteed to play in Europe next year and figuring that we're probably going to play in Champions League with the youngest roster in the league, I think. I've got to figure one of the least expensive rosters in the league. So it just very different to Dortmund, where it's a very dark world for them right now. You know, not a lot of confidence in the coach. Not a lot of confidence in their one guy who made it to the, you know, who will probably be on the roster for the Euros, and Niklas Füllkrug. Not a lot of hope over there.
You know, we've got a few minutes left before we take our break, but is it as simple as that? Their expectations, the coach, I mean, our expectations were nothing. So we're happy with 11th, like you said. Honus is the second best coach in the Bundesliga this season, outside of some guy and some ugly fella in Leverkusen. We've got more players on the national team. The value of our roster has gone through the roof. Is it as simple as expectations, though? Like, my thought is that Dortmund has had a hangover since that Mainz match day 34 last season. They had the Meisterschale in their hands and blew it. And my thought is that there's a hangover, and they're almost like Munich in a way, and that all that matters for them is the Champions League now, because everything else has just gone away. So is it as simple as expectations? Do those guys, the Dortmund fans, see any light at the end of the tunnel in this, or is it just a dark, dark cave?
I got the sense it's a very dark cave right now. They're excited about Karim Adeyemi, and I think absolutely rightfully so. But they're down on quite a number of the players. I think they hope there's going to be a decent amount of roster turnover next season, potentially coaching turnover next season. excited for the Champions League, but their feelings on that were that, like, kind of they could see it going either way against Atletico Madrid, unfortunately. So I made sure that they know the rest of the league is rooting for them. Because if the alternative is RB Leipzig, we will go for anyone over there.
Yeah, it is funny. Tell them if they are looking for a new coach, we know a pretty well-dressed guy named Bruno who could help them out if they're interested.
Yeah, good head of hair. You have to call him sir. You have to call him sir, but he'll get you results of one kind or another.
Right. That's us. Look at us trying to help out those around us. You're welcome, Dortmund fans, for that. Okay, welcome back to part three, News and Cues. And if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, number one, apologies. But number two, you know we always actually take a break. So, Ted, during the break, I forgot to ask you this during our first segment, the what are you having to drink during the podcast segment. I'll get us started. I'm having a Sierra Nevada, which is a Northern California brand, a Torpedo IPA, extra IPA, to get me through this one with you. Are you imbibing in anything, or what do you got?
I am indeed, good sir. I've got a 50 West, which is a local Cincinnati brewery. I have their Coast to Coast IPA. So it's like an East Coast, West Coast hybrid. Mm. It is delicious. I discovered it last summer. It delighted my wife and I. And so I try to keep it in stock. Even though she's pregnant, I just get to drink more of it.
You're such a good husband. Well done, sir. You know, that is a perfect segue to talk about some of the perfect leadership that Stuttgart has right now. So why don't we dive in to some news and cues? First off, the drama continues. We talked about this last couple of weeks, but it's still an issue. You know, the Konstadter curve, the traveling support protested the first 10 minutes of the game. I'm sure they'll protest the game coming up against Frankfurt. Quick reminder, they called on the entire EV to resign from the supervisory board of the AG that runs the football club. The AG basically said that Klaus Vogt is a jerk. So Alexander Verrill said he's never seen anything as unprofessional as what Klaus Vogt did, because Klaus Vogt said that the AG is taking away all his power. Oh, by the way, all of those guys sit next to each other at the game, so I'm guessing that's super not awkward at all. So that's still going on there. I don't know if I just like to bring this up because as an American, it's gorgeous. I know it's very serious over in Germany, but I also bring it up because I like to put people on the spot because we have no way of making sense of this. So Ted, do you have any way of making sense of this or any thoughts on this?
I do not have a decoder for this situation. It would make fantastic reality TV. If someone who lives in that world also has a little bit of crossover in their Venn diagram into Bundesliga or the city of Stuttgart, they could make a fortune distilling this down, making it make sense to Americans, because it is spicy.
It's crazy. Yeah. So we don't have any more news on that. Actually, we do have something here. You and I were talking about it off the air, and we were trying to figure out how we could bring this up in a nonchalant way, and there's no way to do it. So let's just throw it out there. Is you found about 20 minutes before the show, what rumor did you hear?
Yeah, so I keep seeing this on Twitter/X and also on Kicker now. It's the lead story when you click on their Bundesliga page. Apparently, our friend Alex Verla was, I think the picture appeared to be at the, I don't know if this was at the match this last weekend, but it was at a match anyway, with our old friend Armin Fay, the Meister trainer from 2007.
Yeah, if you don't know your Stuttgart history, he was the last coach to bring a championship to Stuttgart. And then he came back in a second tour as well, and it didn't end as well. But he also had some upper management role with Stuttgart as well. So what is happening here is that outside of all of the drama that is going on, Stuttgart hasn't had a sporting CEO since Thomas Hitzlsperger left about 2-3 years ago. And this is where Ted and I got super confused, because yeah, you're like, wait a minute, we've got Fabian Wohlgemuth. He's the sporting director. Well, yes, he is. But technically there's supposed to be somebody on the supervisory board that is hired to be in charge of the sport. And so they're the CEO of sport. And we haven't had one in a while. And so that is some of the criticism against Klaus Vogt is like, why haven't you hired somebody? In his defense, who do you hire for this job? Is it going to be Sven Mislintat? Well, that didn't work out. Is it going to be Fabian Vollgemut? Well, he's only had a year plus on the job. It's been a great year plus, but it's only been a year plus. So now Armin Vey is coming out of the woodwork. We joked last week that Christian Gettner was possibly in the running. I mean, I think at some point, maybe Matt, Ted, and I will be in the running for this. I mean, I don't know what's happening. Armin Vey, I guess. I don't know.
He's got soccer know-how, at least, which is more than you can say for many of the people on the board right now. So maybe that's maybe that's a positive.
Yeah, I guess. I would probably say no, just because I'm so scarred by bringing Bruno back that I don't. It's just, okay, we'll build a statue of you, Armin, but let's just leave it at that right now. And stay out of the, I don't know if in 2024 we need to bring back the voices of 2007. I guess that's my thought on that. Let's get into Europe a little bit. So we have officially qualified for some form of Europe, either fifth place or third place, possibly second place, but Champions League or Europa play. So here's what Honus said. I don't believe that 60 points will be enough. We have 60 points, but I think very often we're going to need more and we'll need more points this year. That's why we're well advised to move on quickly to Frankfurt, end quote. Ted, we're in this weird spot now where if we finish fifth, that's going to be disappointing. It's kind of wild because everything has been so great the first 28, 29 matches that now if we slip, which is possible, people are going to probably look at this season as a disappointment, at least the first week or two afterwards, which is a completely ridiculous but somewhat fair statement at this point.
Yeah, totally. And don't forget, I mean, Honus had, you know, what got him ousted at Hoffenheim was, you know, they were sitting pretty high up in a European place or very close to it. And then,
yep, they were four.
You know, I'm not trying to bring bad juju on our team. I knock on wood as I say this, but, you know, had a really rough slide at the very end of that last season there that knocked them out of Europe. And I think ultimately down to like ninth place or something like that. So, yeah, from where we sit, I think it would be a deep disappointment. I don't think any of us think that it is likely that we finish that low based on current results and form of the team, but it's a possibility.
Yeah, so hopefully he learned from his Hoffenheim time and, you know, he went on, I think it was like an 8 or 9 game skid that cost them. They went from fourth to ninth, like you said. And so hopefully he's learned from that and hopefully he's got the guys ready because these two next matches are actually huge again. Well, every match is huge. It's such hyperbole to say that, but against two teams that you should quote unquote beat, we've got to show up and get some points against them. So hopefully we can keep that Europe trip going. Dennis and Joshua. So that's some news here. The Brighton manager said that Dennis is coming back. Where a lot of Stuttgart supporters said, well, it's a purchase option and it's our choice if we want to bring it back or not. And then the bad news, like we mentioned earlier, is Josh is out for the foreseeable future with his foot issue. What do you think, man? Is Dennis going back to Brighton? Is he here to stay? It's a tough question at this point.
Yeah, I feel like I think it hinges largely on what happens with Seyru. If Seyru is gone, we have to keep Dennis. And as I understand it anyway, I think that the clauses in their contracts end up being roughly equal. I think we'll get about 20 million euros out of whoever buys Seyru. And I believe that if we qualify for Champions League, I think the figure in Dennis's contract becomes 20 million, whether that's euros or pounds, I'm not sure, but pretty close. So I don't see any way. I mean, this is a guy who is totally upfront about wanting to play for the national team. He's in the starting 11 regularly. He's very happy here. He's singing with the crowd after matches. He's giving great interviews, so engaged. I just don't see it. And the other thing is who knows if Roberto De Zerbi is the manager at Brighton next year, or if he's the manager at FC Bayern next year or someplace else. So I think that may affect the situation too.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see for sure what's going to happen. We got some questions here. Mick Chaos throws at us thoughts on what Honus is doing, staying with Stuttgart and Xabi Alonso staying with Leverkusen, what that'll mean for the Bundesliga. It feels like we could be at a turning point when it comes to the popularity of the league and the quality of the teams. I think this is a great question. I think Matt mentioned it last episode, is that the Stuttgart matches are the ones you want people to watch. They're just fun matches. Even when things don't turn out the way we want them to as biased fans, they're just fun football. And arguably it's been more fun than Leverkusen, because Leverkusen's had some closer matches, but they always win in dramatic fashion. So that's a lot of fun. I want to stick to the other part of the question, is how good is it for the Bundesliga that you have these two guys staying with what you said earlier, Dennis said it, the two best teams in the league, at least for another year. I think that's ideal.
It's fantastic. Yeah. I think it's been such a stagnant league the last 10 years with Bayern winning it every single time. It just seems scripted to start the season. And especially last year with the heartbreak on the last day for Dortmund, not winning that. So this is the best possible thing that could have happened the season following that. I think it's going to expose people to two new teams in the Champions League as well, you know, that haven't been there in quite a while. So I think that's going to be, yeah, it's going to be great exposure for the league. Can only do good things in my eyes.
We got another couple questions about the roster. So what are realistic transfers, ins and outs? And then another question, do you guys think that Seiru, Dennis, and Alex will be wearing the Bruce ring next year? Bayern are struggling and may need a better backup to Neuer. Gerassi stock is rising, as we all know, and Brighton may want Undav back, as we mentioned. So when it comes to ins, I have no clue. I know we've got a couple kids coming in, and we'll talk about that in another episode. I think Fabian Vogelmuth likes to buy cheap like Sven did, but he likes to buy German talent cheap as opposed to French talent. In terms of outs, I think you mentioned it before. It's the Dennis and Seiru thing is going to be interesting. But let's add Chris and Ito to this mix, because prior to the season, Ito was getting some overtures from the Italian league. I thought it was kind of interesting. Chris wasn't going bonkers celebrating, and he was somewhat linked to Bayern, Dortmund, I should say, next season. That got me a little concerned here. So let's throw Dennis and let's throw Seiru out of the mix real quick. And let's throw Alex, let's throw Chris, let's throw Ito in there. Which one of those three do you think it's just absolutely vital that we hold on to? If I can only give you, I'll give you two of them. Two of those three. Which ones do you think we got to keep?
I think Alex would be my number one of the three. I think he's incredibly important and has proved it this season. And it's not a knock against Fabi Bredlow, you know, perfectly capable number two, great backup. You know, Dennis Simon, awesome that he saved a penalty in the match for the second team over the weekend. But I think I have to think if he was ready, he would be on the bench more often this season. Mm-hmm. So I think keeping Alex around is huge. And then I would go Ito number two. And that's my thought there is more so just the depth in that, you know, we're seeing it now with, you know, Daxo unfortunately could go down in a heartbeat, the poor guy. And let's hope he's back next season at full health, because we're so much better with him. But if Baldi goes out, if Ruo goes out, it's just really crucial to have someone like an Ito in that role. That would be my take. I think Chris has been absolutely phenomenal this season, but I think he's the most replaceable in Honus's system with the guys that we currently have on the team. I think you could slide a Leveling over there maybe. And it's a drop off for sure. But I think Leveling could be a serviceable replacement maybe.
Yeah. I think he's kind of on the Chris trajectory where he's super. If you remember when Chris first showed up, he wasn't super impressive. He had flashes, but he couldn't make a decision that was a right decision. And then it clicked. And that's kind of where Jamie's at, where he has these flashes. And then when he gets in the final third, you're like, what are you doing? But he's starting to improve on that stuff. I would say Alex for sure. I love how he plays defense. He has bobbles like all goalies do. But the way he starts our offense is, I think, so key to what we do. I can't believe I'm going to say this. I would probably keep Chris over Ito. And I think Ito is a little bit a victim of his quiet success. He's just so good and he's so quiet about it. And when he was out for that little bit, we didn't really miss him. And it was because we had Anthony Ruo and we had Daxo playing great. So that's one that I'm not super comfortable with. We've finally got this like magic triangle back a little bit with Chris and with Dennis and with Seiru, and it's so much fun to watch them. I just don't want that to go away, but it's hard to win games 5-6, you know, it's 5-7.
That's fair.
If you don't
I can't wait for Ito to get picked up by some major club and then for the fans of that club to, you know, realize that he's one of the best central defenders in the world and act like no one on the planet knew it, just like Wataru Endo.
Yeah, that's right.
Everybody, like we all knew, buddy.
We were ahead of this. Let's see. We got Shumi fan sends in Forza Valla B. What a win. Tied with Bayern for second. Alex had one of his best games. Seiru is Seiru. We're going to wrap up the news and cues with this, Ted. It's just crazy. We're in second place. We could, in some weird, crazy, bizarro world, overtake them. And that's not a small thing, not just for prestige, but also money. You get more money the higher up on the table you finish. I mean, let that sink in. How crazy is that to say that we're on par with Bayern and it's not match day one, what it usually is?
Seriously. And back to Mick Chaos's first question about how good that is for the Bundesliga. I think it's even better if Bayern doesn't even finish in second place. I think that's awesome for the league.
How crazy. What a time to be alive. And our last one is love you, Travis. Oh, thanks, mom, or whoever always sends that in. That's kind of odd, but I'll take it a little bit. Odds and predictions. We got third place hosting sixth place, but there's an 18-point gap. So it's all but done that Frankfurt is fighting for fifth place, not for, you know, fourth place with us. In the last 20-some matches, we've got 8 wins and 9 losses against these guys. We got a 1-2 win on the road around Thanksgiving. So we scored all 3 of those. If you don't remember, Anton had an own goal. Dennis had a brace. They just had a draw against Werder Bremen, which is a tough team. And they're 2 wins, 2 draws in their last 5. So they're not playing poorly. So a couple things. When I say Frankfurt to you, what do you think? And then when I say we got Frankfurt coming up this weekend, what do you think?
Traditionally, I would say they've been one of those kind of Angstgegners for us they've had it out for us. And actually, now I'm remembering one of the last times that I was on the pod this season was right before the 2-1 against Frankfurt, because I remember making this comment back then, because before we played them in the cup semifinal last year, you and Matt talked about how bad our record has been in the last decade, maybe, against Eintracht Frankfurt. So if you ask me this in another season, I would say I feel very nervous. They're a better team than us. This season, I don't feel that nervous.
I always think of the Philip Kostic Frankfurt. When he left us because we were relegated and he went there, and I think he's in the Italian league now. I can't remember. But they had that run where they won the Europa League. They won one Pokal. I think they went to 2 finals, maybe. They were just playing lights out. And Philip Kostic was a big part of that. And he was just ripping in crosses left and right. So to me, I've always got that vision of them in my head. My other vision is when the last time I was in Germany, went to Frankfurt, and Jeff, who's on the podcast, had a number of their, I believe it's called Apple Vine. And he's like, this is just apple juice. There's nothing in this. And after 3 of them, when he could barely walk or get off the table, he's like, you know what? I think there's something in this. I was like, yes, genius. I think don't fall in that river over there. So I'm worried about their uniform, their prestige, as opposed to who they actually are this season. Now they're on a nice run of form going into this, but I think they've got a number of injuries and they might have to sit a number of guys going into this match against us. I like our chances. I love us playing at home this year. It's just, I think we've only lost 1 and we've drawn 2. So they'll Bayer Leverkusen in the third best team in the league, Heidenheim. So I think I love our chances in this one. I'm going to put you on the spot. What do you think the sports books have this one at? Who's the favorite and by how much?
I feel like they're always pretty tight with these. I would guess maybe they've got us by a goal.
Brilliant. Yeah. So it's us at home. So usually the home team gets half a goal, but they're giving us a full goal in this one. And if you pay attention to the money line, which hopefully kids you don't, but if you pay attention to the money line, I won't even get into it, but they've got Stuttgart by a goal in a big way. It's a big way. Dave, who is on, not our American Dave, but German Dave, who is an Arsenal supporter, always put some bets in, and he knows the money line, so he knows what I'm talking about. But they're begging you to bet Stuttgart in this one, because it's just, that's how much of a big win they say this is going to be. So here's the deal. Chris, Dennis, and Seyru are getting close to breaking the record that the Magic Triangle had of 49 goals. Seyru needs one more goal to set the all-time record for Stuttgart goals. I see another shutout. We've got, I think, 9 shutouts. Let's go for 10. I see after the first 10 minutes, if Frankfurt can't score, and then once the crowd gets into it, man, I see a 3-0 win for the good guys in this one. I think Seyru is going to break that record. We're going to get another ode to Mario Gomez. I would love to see Silas get into the game and get off the schneid a little bit. And then for the third goal, you know what? I've been waiting for this guy to score for a little bit. I'm going Ada Karazor. It's going to happen at some point. Get him out there, vice captain Ada. So I got 3-0 for the good guys in this one, which should be scary for everybody because my predictions have been terrible this year. So, Ted, what do you got?
I'm thinking along the same lines. I would take us beating that spread. So Frankfurt is they're 2 wins, a tie, or 2 wins, 2 ties, and a loss in their last 5. But it's they're on a little bit of a slide, actually. They lost to Dortmund, and then they tied Union and tied Werder Bremen, and they've scored 2 goals in that 3-game stretch. Versus we're on a heater, 10-game unbeaten streak, and at home, and there's going to be black smoke and all sorts of crazy. Maybe we'll even have tennis balls. Who knows? I can't pick 3-0 because you did. That would have been my gut. So I guess I have to up the stakes. And I think I can't up the stakes to 4-0 because I don't know that we've scored 4 goals in a match this season, but we have scored 5 on multiple occasions. So I am going to go, I'm going to go 5-1.
Look at you just bashing our defense. How dare you in this one? Oh, 5. I would take a nice, easy game after the last few, but this is how ridiculous we are. And going back to what you said, and we'll wrap it up here. The expectations of Stuttgart supporters this year versus a club like Dortmund supporters, how we are just reveling in everything that's happening, and how the old line is so true. Sven's first place with 13th place, and we would have all signed up for that in August when this season started, especially when Leipzig blew the doors off us, you know, at the beginning of the season. So for us to be in this position is crazy. I think Honus has got the guys on this weird combo of focus, but fun. And he's allowing people like Dennis to egg on the crowd, but those guys know they've got to perform or they're going to get pulled in the 60th minute, 70th minute, because we do have some depth here. So Honus is just doing a masterclass of keeping these guys focused, but also having fun at the same time. I'm hoping, let's combine our scores. 8-1, big win for Stuttgart on Saturday. That'd be fantastic. Ted, last thoughts before we wrap this one up. This is kind of your big week. You were on the Dortmund episode. You're on this episode. I mean, you're probably the most famous man. Well, in the 2 podcasts, I probably have about 7 listeners. So congratulations.
Man, this is, I never thought this would be my moment. But here I am just basking in the glow. I should have chosen champagne as my pod beverage, I guess. That was an oversight on my part.
Speaking of the glow, let's, you know, we did have some people on Twitter over in Germany who, some people who listen to this, you know, say, what was the eclipse like? I mean, up in Cleveland, it was just amazingly beautiful. I almost missed it because I was supposed to be on a later flight, but I was like, yeah, I'll go. I didn't really expect it to be too much, but it was actually really cool. The whole neighborhood came out. It was kind of just a block party. Kids were out, people were out, everybody, you know, had a beverage. It was just an amazingly good time. And then my one son, I was like, you know, listen, let's enjoy this and have fun. He's like, when's the next one going to be? I was like, you know, in about 40 or 50 years. He's like, oh, well, you won't be around for that. I was like, well, thank you for that. So we took it a little bit seriously there. But yeah, what was it like in Cleveland? It was amazing. The weather was great. What was it like down in Cincinnati?
It was awesome. So Cincinnati was like on the cusp of totality. So we actually drove an hour and 15 minutes to Yellow Springs, Ohio, just to the east of Dayton, which is where Dave Chappelle lives.
Fun fact.
It's a super cool, crunchy little town, great hiking, good restaurants and bars and things like that. So we were very nervous that we were not going to be able to find parking there, but we managed to get a space, no problem. And then parked our bodies at a brewery and just chilled out there for like 3 hours watching the eclipse. And it was, you know, in a nutshell, surprisingly, like having watched Stuttgart for all of these years, because it's like, you look at this thing, you can't stare at it for too long or it will hurt your eyes all this time. And you're waiting and waiting, and then it builds up and then you can take your glasses off. And it's one of the most beautiful things that you've ever seen. I hope that our form is not that fleeting, but but that's the way that it felt to me yesterday.
There is some kind of sick joke about how it took a total eclipse every 50 years for Stuttgart to have this kind of season. So hopefully you're right. This isn't a every 44 year run for the club here, but yeah, it was fantastic. It was beautiful. It was a metaphor, no doubt, because it went from light to dark to light for Stuttgart the last couple of seasons. So as Matt and I usually say, folks, let's just enjoy this run for the next few games for as how many guys are wearing the Bruce ring. This has been a legendary season, a magical season. And just like the eclipse, it's just been awesome to be a part of this season. So, Ted, thanks so much for being part of this episode. Thanks for spreading the word to the Dortmund guys. And hopefully next time we talk to you is after another big Stuttgart win.
Amen.
So the Stuttgart fans are going to be tucking into their Mauertaschen with glee tonight. If you're wondering what a Mauertasche is, it's a culinary speciality of this region. Southwestern German dumpling. And if you're not a fan of Mauertaschen, then always look for Spätzle, which is the southwestern German variety of pasta. I must confess to being a bit more of a Spätzle man myself. But do give the Mauertasche a try if you come here.